This week on Single Take, you've had Hamnet, now try Hamlet, in a new adaptation starring Riz Ahmed. And it's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fines. Rafe Fiennes, that is. All that and more on this episode of Single Take with Daniel Barnes. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Daniel Barnes, film critic. Just film critic. That's it. Today on the show, I'll be reviewing Riz Ahmed as your classic quote-unquote tragic Nepo baby in Hamlet. Oh, everything's a tragedy with these Nepo. Just don't get me started on the Nepo babies. I'm also going to catch up with a few movies that I missed in theaters earlier this year that are now available to watch on streaming and VOD services. But first, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. And yet they made another Hamlet movie anyway.
My good Hamlet, we grieved your sickly father while he lived.
Let the world take note, you are the most immediate to our throne.
I pray you stay with us.
Who goes there? I saw him, Ophelia.
Oh, my lord.
My father.
I'll read the IMDb synopsis for Hamlet. Hamlet comes home for his father's funeral and finds his uncle Claudius marrying his widowed mother Gertrude. His father's ghost reveals Claudius murdered him, leading Hamlet toward revenge and introspection. I guess I should have said spoiler alert there, but yeah, that sounds pretty familiar, right? It's directed by Anil Kuria, adapted by Michael Leslie from a play written some centuries back. Hamlet premiered last year at Telluride. It's just now getting its theatrical release. Riz Ahmed stars as Hamlet. The film also features Morfydd Clark, Joe Alwyn, Sheba Chadha, Avijit Dutt, Art Malik, and Timothy Spall. The action has been updated from Denmark to modern-day London, and it is now set in the South Asian community. Elsinore is a real estate empire. Claudius is the CEO, the murder and marriage at the center of the story. It's a hostile takeover, and so on and so on and so on. It's more or less faithful to the text. The actors do speak in Shakespearean English, although it's obviously pared down a lot. I mean, it's a five-act, sprawling, big, massive play, and this is a 110-minute film. So anything that is not directly connected to the family aspect of it, to the big betrayal that's front and center there, that kind of gets sliced out or put to the side. So there's no Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, there's no Alas, Poor Yorick, but the film does put its spin on a lot of the classic scenes. For example, Hamlet's to be or not to be soliloquy, where he's behind the wheel of a car now, speeding recklessly down the highway, hands off the wheel. So Hamlet, he discovers the corruption that's at the heart of his family's business empire, which he would supposedly inherit upon his father's death. And he discovers this corruption thanks in large part to just a big box of damning evidence that's left lying around the Elsinore headquarters or whatever. And he's seemingly the only one shocked and bothered by the quick marriage of his mother and uncle, which is presented to him as just a shrewd business arrangement, taking care of the mother, protecting the family's business empires. But Hamlet, of course, he's not convinced. Like I said, it's set in modern-day London, so the material is somewhat updated to modern day, But there's also this attempt to make it relevant as well. So Fortinbras in this version, it's not an invading Norwegian prince. What relevance does that have to our life? But rather it's a movement of homeless people who are displaced by Elsinore's developments. And then Hamlet's grief over his father's death and his disturbance about all of the politics and the machinations that are surrounding him, that kind of sends him down from his lofty perch into the underground and to kind of discover what's going on down there. It's not anything, I'll tell you that. It just feels like window dressing. It just feels like piggybacking on an issue for relevance. I felt myself just waiting for the big scenes, for the to be or not to be scene, for the, you know, the poisoning scene, for the Hamlet's father's ghost scenes. You know, how are they going to do their spin on these scenes? That's what I just found myself waiting for. Otherwise, this was pretty monotonous, I felt. Ahmed, he's really good, as you would expect. He doesn't shy from the dickishness of Hamlet or the emotional anguish. I mean, he really goes for it. It's not like a life-changing performance, but what would a life-changing Hamlet even look like today? It's been done, people. Even this kind of like modern day, it's a business, not a kingdom kind of thing, that's been done before. That's also, and it's been done better. The supporting cast here, it's fine. Pretty solid. Morfydd Clark, who was so good in St. Maud, she gets short shrift as Ophelia, I think. But Ophelia, she's pretty used to getting short shrift, so nothing new there. There is one great scene, one showstopper of a scene, and that's the play that Hamlet puts on, that whole sequence there. The play he puts on to expose his uncle's guilt is presented as this interpretive Bollywood number, this kind of surreal and colorful and very kinetic musical number. It's really energetic, eye-popping, disturbing, strange, and it just all works so good, including even the lead-up to it, where Hamlet is kind of humiliating Ophelia in front of the crowd at the wedding. It's so good, it almost felt to me that this whole enterprise, this all was just an excuse to get here, to get to this scene. And we get there, and then it happens, and it's poof, it's gone. And on we trudge, right? Again, where's the next big scene coming? Now, along the way, there's some moments, there's some unique touches. I feel like Polonius is usually often presented as like kind of a doof, and here he's a little more sinister. That could be the Tim Spall effect. So let's wrap this up here, and I hate to keep saying this over and over again, that Riz Ahmed is really good in a mediocre movie, because that was also my take last year on Relay. And that was also pretty much my take in 2021 when I wrote up Mogul Mowgli for DareDaniel.com. But I got to say it again, Riz Ahmed, he's really good in a mediocre movie. I got to say, this is a dump it.
And so old Nick released his demons unto the world of man. And the world of man fell before the demons. And his world became like the guttering candle flame. And God did nothing, for he was invisible. And couldn't he punch his way out of a paper fucking bag anyway? And so, the world of man became old Nick's dominion. And his dominion was hell. How's that?
That was a clip from the film 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple. And if you've ever had a bone temple in your colon, forget it. That is the fourth 28 Later film. Although I don't know if 28 Weeks Later exists within the Bone Temple universe. And if you've ever had a bone temple, forget it. Directed by Nia DaCosta, this is a direct sequel. It's actually filmed at the same time as 28 Years Later, which brought Danny Boyle back to the franchise. Ralph Fiennes and Jack O'Connell, they return from 28 Years Later. DaCosta directed the pretty good Candyman update, and this one's also pretty good. I missed it in theaters, but it is now available to watch on Netflix. I caught up with it last weekend, so I thought I'd talk about it for a few minutes, give you my thoughts. And thought number one, wow, that was a lot more gore than I ever needed, especially in the first half. It's a zombie movie, so I knew what I was getting into. I knew I was getting gore. I saw 28 Years Later. I was fully aware. My loins were completely girded, and if you doubt me, come inspect my loins. The girding is truly spectacular. So I knew what I was in for at a certain level, but holy moly, that was a level that I really could have done without, especially the torture aspect of it. Just not my kind of thing. But just like 28 years later, I thought started really strong and kind of trailed off towards the end. I think the Bone Temple starts kind of weak and really revs up as it goes, especially as it gets into that last third. We pick up pretty much where we left off from 28 years later with our child hero Spike having been abducted by a Teletubbies-obsessed, blonde wig-wearing gang of psychos led by Jimmy. That's Jack O'Connell. Jimmy believes that he's receiving instructions directly from his father, that's Satan, in his head. And Jimmy, he's not one of these types to question instructions. A lot of follow-through on this kid. He and his gang, they are full steam ahead on realizing Satan's vision as supposedly transcribed to Jimmy, and they come across a group of survivors who learn just how horrible that vision can get. That scene is, wow, is that not my thing? But then, lo and behold, here comes Ralph Fiennes just saving the fucking movie. This was what kept me going through these early scenes, was the Ralph Fiennes scenes. He's absolutely remarkable here. He returns from 28 years later as Dr. Ian Kelson. He's a former NHS doctor who might be a complete lunatic and might also be the only sane man left in the world. He's survived among the infected alone for years and had even been able to study them and actually build empathy for these flesh-eating monsters. His relationship with the infected alpha he named Samson is the weird heart of this movie, and it's actually more emotionally affecting, I thought, than the stuff with Spike and his dad from the first film. It's like Dr. Kelson and a zombie, and it's a really touching relationship that they have here. O'Connell, he's also very good as the deranged Jimmy. That whole group is just skin-crawling stuff. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty familiar psycho stuff. Fiennes is doing something really next level here. I'm consistently amazed by Ralph Fiennes. I mean, obviously, he's a great actor. He finds subtle shadings in the character. He's really great at inhabiting the body and the soul. He cuts right to the emotional heart every single time. And yet he also has this amazing theatricality. And he gets yet another fantastic, transcendent Ralph Fiennes dance-off in the climactic Sign of the Devil sequence here. And it's just so amazing that here's this guy in Dr. Kelson who he is slathered in a blood-like iodine. He has painstakingly constructed the grisly ossuary of the title, the Bone Temple. And yet he's also this heartbreaking figure in the movie. And he's also kind of the hero as well. So the film ends on that high note, but there is one more scene that points toward a third 28 years later film. However, maybe not. I don't like to talk about box office, but it does seem as though the third film and its existence, the next 28 years later film, I should say, may have been predicated on this movie doing well at the box office, and it did not. 28 years later did fine. This movie did not do fine at all. But, you know, maybe it finds its footing on Netflix. So while I was quite disturbed by much of the first half of 28 years later, the second half is so good. And that Sign of the Devil sequence is just so fantastic. It's such a physical performance. It's so theatrical. It's so wonderful. I mean, Fiennes is just absolutely outstanding. Even if this is not your thing and you're never going to watch this movie ever in a trillion years, find that sequence on YouTube. Find it on Netflix. It's really, really, really great stuff by Ralph Fiennes. You can check that film out now on Netflix or any of the major VOD services for rent. I also want to talk for a second about Crime 101, which is now available on Prime Video, and which I also checked out last weekend. Crime 101 is directed by Bart Layton. It stars Chris Hemsworth, Halle Berry, Mark Ruffalo, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Nick Nolte, and Barry Keoghan. Chris Hemsworth, he plays Davis. That's your run-of-the-mill master thief pulling off one impossible heist after the next. And yet, more than anything, what does he want? He wants out. And he comes across the score of a lifetime, so he agrees to one last job. Yeah, nothing new under the sun here. Have you seen a movie before? Great. You won't be surprised by anything that happens. That's fantastic. Mark Ruffalo, he plays the dogged cop on Hemsworth's trail. Keoghan is the young psycho out to steal his spot, and Nolte is the old guy who can't be trusted. Halle Berry, she plays a realtor, and it's not initially clear how she fits into this world of criminals, but her story is given equal weight from the beginning, and she kind of mirrors Hemsworth's Davis in that they both, like I said, they want out. They're fed up with their job. They're fed up with the people in charge, and they're looking for that walk away money. So what does it all boil down to? A lot of genre conventions, a lot of solidly filmed car chases, a lot of high stakes heists in headlight soaked Los Angeles. Basically, lukewarm Heat. Everything Heat, or for that matter, Collateral did, this film does a little or a lot worse. And I'm not even the biggest Heat fan in the world, but man, like if I didn't dig the De Niro, Amy Brenneman angle from Heat, I sure could care less about whatever is happening with Hemsworth and Monica Barbaro here. What a waste of time that whole plot is. In a film that's 141 minutes and doesn't need to be that. That said, it's a solid film. I mean, it is slow given all the action, but I actually liked the novel-like pace and scope. I liked that all these stories were given equal weight. Cast's obviously very strong. The movie held me. It held me. Overall, though, it does lack substance. Its charms, they're very superficial, and they evaporate quickly. Because I'm at the point, I can't even rate this thing. It has constructed a house right on the see-it-skip-it border. It is somehow straddling this unforgiving line between see-it and skip-it. So I am at a loss as to what to do, so you're on your own. Okay, just remember me as a hero. Splat. Crime 101 is now available to stream on Prime Video. So you got a couple of options to watch this weekend on the old TV box. And I haven't even mentioned my number one film of the year so far, The Clubhouse Leader, now available to watch on VOD services. And that is Epic, Elvis Presley in Concert, Baz Luhrmann's concert film that he put together largely from footage that he came across while doing research for his movie, Elvis. I saw this film, I'm not going to give it a full review because I did watch it a couple of months ago on the big screen with my good friend, big screen. Have you been to a movie lately? The screen was big-ish, not that much bigger than my TV, but big enveloping sound, that made all the difference with Epic. And I saw this with my good friend David Paul. So glad I got to see this in the theater. It's really about recreating the experience of seeing Elvis live in Las Vegas, at his residency in Las Vegas, on a night when he was really cooking. And of course, he was not always really cooking, and certainly Luhrmann and everybody else would admit that. But this kind of stands as a work of reputation, rehabilitation, to say that, you know, actually, there was some smoking hot music happening, too, and just some fun performances. Baz Luhrmann, you know, his Elvis, it was sort of in my wheelhouse. It was wheelhouse curious, I guess. This film could not be more in my wheelhouse. Even that first 10 to 15 minutes of explanatory context, the part of the documentary I usually hate, even that is just filled with energy. But when those concert scenes start, man, that movie, it just really starts to smoke. It's a blast, pure entertainment for me. And as I said, my number one film of the year. I don't expect it to be number one at the end of the year, maybe not even top 10, but as I said, a blast, and especially if you're a big Elvis fan. To recap, I'm giving a dump it to Hamlet. Riz Ahmed is very good in the title role. There are some good moments. One great scene, but it's just not enough to recommend what is otherwise a tired affair. That film is out now. It is opening today, Friday, April 10th, at the Tower Theater in Sacramento and other art house theaters across the country. I'm giving a bump it to 28 Years Later, : The Bone Temple. I was disgusted by much of the first half, but greatly entertained by much of the second half, and I think Ralph Fiennes is absolutely transcendent. See it for him. If for nothing else, that film's available now on Netflix. I'm abstaining from rating Crime 101, available now on Amazon Prime, and I am giving a big-time bump it to Epic, Elvis Presley in Concert, Baz Luhrmann's Elvis Presley concert film. It is available now on VOD services. And that's all I have for you on this episode of Single Take with Daniel Barnes. But let me ask you this. Are you a fan of classic films, foreign films, art house films? Check out the Cannon Fodder podcast, which I co-host with the comedy legend Corky McDonald. We review films from the most recent Sight and Sound Critics Top 250 Films of All Time list. And we release new episodes every other Tuesday. Coming up this Tuesday, April 14, we'll be reviewing A Touch of Zen, the 1971 Wuxia classic directed by King Hu. And stay tuned for more episodes of Single Take. If you want to support me, Corky, or any of these endeavors, please visit daredaniel.com and find Support the Show in the menu. Your support is essential now more than or at least the same as ever. And as always, it's immensely appreciated. These movies tickets ain't free, people. Unless I buy them with my Cinemark rewards points. But is that what you want? That's crazy. Until next time, I'm Daniel Barnes saying woe unto hypocrites and save me a seat in the back row. Bye-bye.